This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 108 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. How are you?
Good. Long time we've no talk. It seems to me we've done this already once this week.
That's right. And here we are again. Got some interesting topics, a little bit of news, and a lot of listener feedback.
Absolutely. We'll start off, I guess, with our little topics tonight. The FAA sent out a stiff warning with some interesting statistics. Basically breaking news today, and we're going to cool down the hype and try to find out what the truth is behind the reality of UAVs. Drone racing gets some help from NFL football.
Wow.
New ways to take down a UAS, and lots, as Max said, listener mail, and of course, some video of the week. Our first story tonight comes from the FAA themselves. Pilot unmanned aircraft reports much higher in 2015. If you haven't listened to the news, then you would probably think that that hasn't happened. But if you have listened to the news recently, it seems like there's a pilot identification of a drone almost daily.
We are seeing an awful lot of that. The FAA tells us that in 2014, pilots reported 238 unmanned aircraft sightings. And in 2015, this year, just through August 9th, we have more than 650 sightings. And these are not all just low-level sightings, are they, David?
No, there are reports as high as 10,000 feet or above, which who the hell's flying a UAV at above 10,000 feet besides the military? I mean, that just blows my mind. And hopefully that's was just an anomalous sighting, but we see a lot of that. And the other thing was the FAA basically broke it down a little simpler, talking about June and July of 2014 versus 2015. 2014 of June, there was 16 reports. June of 2015, there was 138. July of 2014, there were 36 reports. June 2015, there was 137.
Well, one question, of course, is what's the FAA doing about this? And in their release, they really talk about four things that they're doing. One is that they're working with their industry partners in the Know Before You Fly campaign. Now, you may recall this was a campaign founded by the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, AUVSI, the Academy of Model Aeronautics, the AMA, and also the Small UAV Coalition. And this campaign seeks to educate unmanned aircraft users, tell them, you know, where can you operate and how can you stay within the rules. That website is knowbeforeyoufly.org. I think we've talked about that in the past. That's the first thing. The FAA is also supporting the National Interagency Fire Centers. If you fly, we can't. That's an effort to help reduce interference with firefighting operations. And we've seen some of that, unfortunately, in the very recent past. David, they're also working with law enforcement officials.
And they are, I hate to say it, but I think they're getting to the point where they're going to have to start cracking down. The FAA, quote, said, unauthorized operators may be subject to stiff fines and criminal charges, including possible jail time. So they're starting to work with law enforcement to hunt down these people, and they're going to start prosecuting, which they're going to need to do. We as an industry can't keep having this because, I mean, we've gone from bad news to even worse news.
And the other thing that the FAA says they're doing is they're encouraging the public, all of us, to report unauthorized drone operations to local law enforcement, which is interesting. Not to them. They want us to report to local law enforcement and for basically all of us to help try to discourage this illegal activity, or the activity that the FAA considers illegal. So those are the kind of major thrusts that the FAA talks about. It's a lot of awareness. It's some enforcement, but as we know, enforcement has been difficult. The FAA doesn't really have the resources to conduct many investigations or to get out there and enforce what they believe the restrictions are on commercial or dangerous use.
So we'll keep an eye on it. We'll see. Hopefully in December, if they release another report like this, maybe the numbers will start going down. But I'm scared that Christmas is coming and the numbers will keep growing up exponentially.
Yeah, that's my fear as well. We're gonna see increases in the reports of this kind of activity rather than decreases. But as you say, David, this bears some watching. And I think, as we've said here and in other places, we all kind of have a role in helping others understand the ways that they need to operate their drones so that they're done in a safe manner.
It's all of our responsibility, folks. But let's talk about an article from Fortune.com. Drone Roundtable, Cooling Down the UAV Hype. Fortune gathered up a roundtable of drone experts consisting of Gretchen West, formerly of AUVSI, Lisa Ellman of Hogan Lovells UAV practice, and James Grimsley, who is the CEO of DII LLC. And basically, they asked a question to all three of them. I guess the first one was what was expected and what was the positives recently. And one of the first comments was the NPRM was very pro-innovation and more than expected. All three pros sort of were like, we were pleasantly surprised with what came out of the NPRM. Now, it's still not, it was preliminary, but they were expecting more draconian rules and even more tighter restrictions than actually there were.
Yeah, I think we were all pleasantly surprised by what we saw in the NPRM in that regard. So that was good. And that was, in a way, David, that was almost like an inflection point in the perception of the FAA by a lot of people, not the general public, but by a lot of people in the unmanned industry and enthusiasts of unmanned aircraft. So I think that was kind of a turning point in the perception of the FAA.
That was good news. What the second set of comments was, they commented that the 333 process is a, quote, Band-Aid, causing the USA, United States, to lag behind other countries, that it's delaying the process of getting up to speed and in sort of tying one hand behind the back of progress for the United States.
I guess the way I look at it is it is a Band-Aid, but it's a known and planned Band-Aid. In other words, it comes from a recognition, I think, that the final regulations, that process is very lengthy. And rather than doing nothing in the meantime, at least we have this, quote, Band-Aid type of process to at least allow some progress. So in my view, it kind of is what it is, and it's really what it was expected to be. Not too much more, but at least we have that.
The next comment was, overregulation seemed to cause the hype because testing isn't removing not worthy or impractical applications. We've talked about it being a disruptive technology, and everybody's coming out with lots and lots and lots of ideas on what to do with the UAVs and drones, and some of them are pretty wild and some of them are pretty down to earth. But it's an interesting concept that because people don't have the ability to test out test as quickly or as a normal industry would, it's sort of purveying the hype that that we're not getting real practical ideas. We're getting more pie in the sky ideas, and we need to get rid of the pie in the sky ideas by testing them and proving them that they don't work, so that we can streamline and get more practical ideas. That was a very interesting and telling comment from the industry experts, in my opinion, Max.
Yeah, and think back to the early days of manned aviation. And, you know, we saw a lot of innovation then. People had all kinds of ideas about how to fly. Some of them were practical or turned out to be practical, and some of them were pretty harebrained. But if there had been constraints, regulatory constraints placed on top of that, I think it would have been a much more difficult path to manned flight. And here we are with unmanned flight, and we have those obstacles. And so, you know, that causes kind of a problem. But they also talked about some other obstacles in this article that are being underplayed.
Which we don't underplay this one, but the lack of recognition of FAA rules. There's a lot of people out there that don't know the rules or just sort of pretending not to know the rules. Another good one that they brought up was communications infrastructure. There's no real set communication in the industry and pooling together resources and infrastructure yet. You know, that was supposed to come from the test sites, but that doesn't seem to have gelled, I guess, the way it was originally presented.
And another obstacle being underplayed that's mentioned here is battery life, and that it's not where it needs to be. This afflicts not just this industry, but others as well. There are constraints based on battery life. Of course, when you have a multi-rotor or some other UAV, battery life is a very important consideration. These are high draw kinds of environments. The motors require a lot of energy, and that limits the flight duration, which of course limits the ability to perform certain missions. So, yeah, short flight time is an issue for many UAVs.
And they had two other little regulatory things. One was, they got into discussion of regulating privacy with drones, and they pushed back, like a lot of people in the industry that we talk about, that there are already privacy rules. We don't need privacy rules for drones. We need to enforce the existing rules, and they also affect drones. If you're spying on somebody and invading their privacy, there are laws about that already.
Sure.
And the last comment was, they asked, what do they think they will not see in 10 years, but more like 50? And universally, they all said delivery by drone.
Package delivery.
Package delivery.
Yeah, a lot of obstacles there. A lot of things to be figured out. But, you know, progress continues. But, yeah, I don't think we're going to see package delivery by drone in the next couple of years. I would be surprised if we do. But, hey, maybe I'll be surprised.
They're not going to be able to deliver to me unless they decide to reduce the flight.
Yeah, you live too close to the airport.
I live too close to the airport. The next one was subtitled by my co-host, the F1 addict, Racing Improves the Breed. Yes, I did know where that phrase came from. This is from TheVerge.com, one of our favorite websites. Drone Racing League receives $1 million investment from Miami Dolphins owner. Pretty neat.
Yeah, this comes from Stephen Ross. He not only owns the Miami Dolphins, but he's also a property developer. And I guess the guy is worth billions, but he's invested $1 million in a new startup. This is the Drone Racing League. And you can find that at thedroneracingleague.com. I found nothing there except an option where you could sign up for their newsletter by putting your email address in, which I did. But I don't think there's anything else at that website as we record this right now. But they've got an interesting CEO of this league whose name is Nick Horbizeski. And he's got a lot of previous experience producing sporting events. And they're planning to hold the first FPV race sometime later this year.
The article does go into a couple of things about first-person viewing. Recently, there was a drone racing, and they have millions of hits on YouTube, but the actual attendance to the event was only 60 people.
Right. That was the U.S. National Drone Racing Championships that took place recently at the California State Fair. They had 120 pilots competing. There was $25,000 in prizes. But as you said, David, only 60 spectators showed up. Of course, it's kind of early in this whole thing. But I think what it's envisioned here is that drone racing could be a fantastic spectator sport. There are some things that sort of have to be figured out, because the greatest number of spectators would probably be something on television. So you've got to be able to capture this in a way that people watching racing on TV could get as much out of it as they do, say, from a NASCAR race.
And that's actually the model they're using. NASCAR has something called FanVision, which allows you to watch feeds directly from the cars on your smartphone. And it also is the same telemetry. If you watch NASCAR races, they tell you how fast the guy's going and which gear's he in. And the same thing goes with Formula One racing now. You get inside the cockpit digitally, and you can, on the fan vision, though, you can actually like see their tachometer going and seeing what gears they're in. And all of that's relayed to you in real time to your smartphone. So if you can imagine that kind of information being relayed from the drone to your, as it's going through the course, you can visualize them going up and down and over, and the telemetry, like the person who's seeing it flying the FPV view. So It's going to be interesting. Well, I'm looking forward to following this and, you know, seeing if it does point out to be a elaborate sport. And if the course is fairly complicated, it could be very interesting to watch, you know, as you're moving up and down and through obstacles and such. So yeah,
for sure. It could be an interesting viewpoint for a spectator. But I think they've got to increase the quality of the video. The FPV video I've seen doesn't meet the standards that are set in, for example, automobile racing, which have some really, really high quality video now available from the cars. So a little work is needed there, I think.
Well, it just needs another camera, but camera adds weight. Weight reduces speed. And that's the math goes down. But there's a lot of engineers out there working on that. So we can get on to our listener mail, because that's the most important thing. That's coming from you guys. In our show notes will be two quick stories about Boeing using a 2-kilowatt laser to take out a UAV, and South Korea using sound frequencies to take down, in a laboratory environment, to take down UAVs as anti-UAV technologies. Real quick, just go through and check out the show notes. They're pretty self-explanatory. The article about the South Koreans using sound is very interesting, and the challenges they have with that. So check those out in the show notes, but we need to keep going, because we have a deadline. So with that, I guess, Max, we should get on to the video of the week.
All right. We've got kind of a couple here. One comes in from Rob in Perth, and this is a YouTube video, Will Sutton Home Free, subtitled Free Running the Isle of Man. Rob tells us this is a video of an incredible athlete, beautifully filmed. He brings it to our attention because a lot of it was filmed from an octocopter. And this is really dramatic. So this is a free runner, Will Sutton, and he's running across the Isle of Man. And this is really well captured from the perspective over his shoulder many times from this multi-rotor. A great video.
Kind of hard to imagine running with an octocopter chasing you. It's just sort of
run faster. It's kind of,
either that or I just keep looking over my shoulder. You know, it was pretty neat. The also one came from CNN.com, and It's when animals silence the drones. It's the when animals attack video for UAVs. It does have one that came out specifically, and it's an eagle that takes out a quadcopter. So we'll have links to those show notes. They're pretty self-explanatory. We've had a running theme on the video of the week of animals deciding that they don't like quadcopters and octocopters and headbutting them and taking them out. So this is just more fuel for the fire.
All right, David, some listener feedback.
We get a lot of feedback, and we do read it all, guys. Just so you know, it might not get into the podcast, but we do read it. The first one was from David. Greetings, I love your podcast, and this is why I'm really disappointed. We don't like hearing that, David, but
but that's okay.
But that's okay, because we want it all, good, bad, and indifferent. The FAA did not grant Fly For Me the ability to conduct the business they are promoting. If you read the grant, they can only fly a DJI Phantom for R&D. That is it. If anyone flies commercially for them, the pilots still need to have a pilot's license, for they cannot fly over people, property, etc. If they want to match the clients with pilots, presumably pilots with 333s, they do not need a 333 to do so. The 333 is completely unrelated. If you miss this, how can we expect the general public to understand? Well, thank you for your confidence in us. And I'll be honest with you, David, I read it differently, that I thought Fly For Me was hiring people to fly under their 333. But like you said, the 333 is for only R in development. So, Max, what was your take on this?
Yeah, this comes from an item we discussed in episode 103. This Massachusetts-based company, Fly For Me. And the article, it is kind of confusing. I went back and I took another look at it, and it talks about two things. It talks about them receiving a Section 333 exemption to conduct community training workshops, research and development, aerial inspections of buildings and land. And at the same time, the article describes how they want to go on and additionally establish this marketplace where you can book flights, customers can book flights, and pilots can bid on projects and so forth. The article kind of intertwines the two. And I think the point that our listener David is bringing up is that they really are separate, that the 333 exemption is for certain things specifically, doesn't address this business, this Uber kind of business for drones that they want to create. So, yeah, I think David makes a good point. It really is, I think, two separate kinds of activities coming out of this one company.
See, and even then I was confused, because I know that they said that they could do inspections of buildings. So they were looking for people to hire to do the inspections of buildings and fly under their 333 exemption. But David, thank you for keeping us honest. And again, folks, it's an example. If you hear something and it doesn't sound like we're right, tell us, because Max and I don't profess to be know-it-all. We just are opinionated people on the subject. And so definitely keep us honest. David, thank you for doing that. Next one from Ken. Knowing the law, I would never do this. That said, I might launch one of my more expendable RC planes and let the dogfight begin. And this is something that's been happening a lot recently, and this was from CNN.com. Man shot down a drone with a shotgun. And Dave wrote back, said, wonder if someday there'll be a business model equipping homes with automatic drones that are used to chase other drones off your property. Think about it. A drone tangling a series of long monofilament breakaways, flying over another drone would bring it down in a heartbeat. Nor do I think there's anything illegal about it. I really don't like this trend of what can we do to blow them out of the sky? You know, folks, there's this thing I'd like to remind you. It's called gravity. What comes up must come down. And if you're in a development area, you know, and you decide to take a shotgun and shoot your neighbor's drone out of the sky, that shot has to come back down, and it's not going to just come back down. And it's going to come back down with the quadcopter. But I don't know, Max. I wasn't expecting this tit for tat when we started doing this. You know, we really wanted to avoid talking about drones and weapons and shooting people and hellfires, and now we've got people shooting up at the drones.
Yeah, I guess it's not entirely unexpected. But one thing that's been pretty consistent with all of these types of stories is that the shooter, let's say, has been held liable for the damage to the drones. In all cases that I've seen reported where the owner of the drone has filed a lawsuit or where the law enforcement authorities are involved in this, the shooter has been found to be in violation of law or regulations or whatever, and not the drone operator. So it ends up having kind of the opposite effect.
All right. The next one was from Rod. He's a routine listener of the UAV Digest, and since I found it recently and I always enjoy it, I particularly enjoy the quad coverage, but I enjoy all the other stuff too. And he's talking about LiPo batteries.
He's been researching the dangers of LiPo batteries when used in hobby applications. And he's posted some advice to people in a couple of different blogs and forums, I guess, and just wanted to pass this along to us as well. But some of the points he makes is that there are extreme dangers of using LiPo or lithium polymer in lithium ion batteries in hobby settings. As I said, he's been studying this extensively. He's concluded that for him anyway, there's no safe way to charge and store these things indoors. They are extremely dangerous if they get ticked off and crashed or overcharged or undercharged or shorted even briefly, they can experience ignition and many other problems that can cause some serious difficulties, especially if you're doing this, charging these things in your house. So I think it's good advice. There is some proper ways to store LiPo batteries like this. There's proper ways to charge and recharge them. So if you are using LiPo batteries yourself, you really, really need to understand the precautions that you need to take with these batteries and take them very, very seriously.
And our friend Parker has always said, never charge them in the house, but did it once and won't ever do it again. Hmm. So, and we've heard other stories. It's knowing your technology, and these are leading edge technologies. You know, if Boeing can't get it right in their triple in the 787, we don't expect the common hobbyist to know, you know, how to do it properly. So, Ron, thank you for sending that in. And I think, Max, we probably should reach out to somebody who's an expert on batteries. I think that would be a good discussion for one of the future shows. Don't you agree?
Yep.
So again, Ron, thank you for that. We've got another one from Chad. I love this story because it's the old argument that says lemonade stands or shoveling snow, should they be charged sales tax? This was boys flying high in Jamestown from the Jamestown Press. And here are these boys that have taken upon themselves to do, believe it or not, footage using a quadcopter for real estate agents.
Yeah, and these are just, you know, teenage boys. And they've got them, or they had an idea about how they could earn some money. They were able to get a DJI Phantom 3 and a camera attached. And they've been doing shoots for real estate companies and getting paid for it. Now, the article, I think, really kind of looks at this story from the perspective of, you know, look at these industrious youth that are applying themselves and, you know, doing great things, which they are. But there's kind of a little problem with this, I think.
The fact that they don't have a 333 exemption?
Yeah. So these guys are, you know, they're performing a commercial operation with these things, you know. Don't know if they're declaring this income to the IRS or not, but wholly aside from that, they clearly don't have approval from the FAA to conduct this kind of commercial activity. So, you know, it's one of those things. I think if someone complains about them, they could find themselves back to mowing lawns or whatever they were doing before.
But yeah, well, unfortunately, now that they're in the newspaper and making national headlines, they're going to be on people's radars. But again, Chad, thank you for that. Also, Chad sent me some thoughts about the fact that he's happy that I'm back on the shows. And I appreciate those. I always appreciate those thoughts, that because we have the greatest listeners on the planet. The next one was from Charles. Rogue drones growing nuisance across the U.S. And this was from the WashingtonPost.com. How rogue drones are rapidly becoming a national nuisance.
Yeah, this is kind of the thing we've been talking about.
What else can we say? As I said on Airplane Geeks, I was having a lovely conversation with my 90-year-old father at lunch, and he looked me in the eye and follows the news and is pretty coherent and said, well, what do we do about those guys flying drones around Newark Airport? Now, he grew up in Newark, New Jersey, so he's kind of fine to Newark Airport, so it's on his radar. And I said to Dad, Dad, I can't fix stupid. I just can't. We don't know if they're being done deliberately or they're being done because they're uneducated people. This article interviews Michael Huerta, who's the FAA administrator, and he quotes the understatement of the year, quote unquote, I'm definitely getting much more concerned about it.
Yeah, and so he should be. He also says that the FAA is going to adopt more stringent enforcement measures in cooperation with law enforcement. So we'll look to see how that develops. But, you know, again, we've got a lot of people with good intentions many times, most of the time, I would say, maybe even a business plan in mind, but either haven't thought this through or are unaware of the implications of their activities when it comes to manned aircraft in the airspace or things like
LiPo batteries,
firefighters on the ground, things like that. So this is an ongoing story, and I think this is going to be kind of one of the big stories during the course of the next 12 months.
Well, it gives us something to talk about every week.
All right. Well, David, I think we've talked about as much as we have time for this week. So we'll bring this to a close. Want to thank all of you for listening to episode 108 of the UAV Digest. Find us at theuavdigest.com. Show notes at theuavdigest.com/108.
And of course, you can find us on social media, on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook, UAV Digest. And if you'd like to help the show, you can do it in multiple ways. One, like all of our listeners that would talk tonight, send us some feedback. Send us a story or comment or anything. And you can send that to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or if you want to make it out to Max or I, you can send it to max@theuavdigest.com or, of course, david@theuavdigest.com. Another way you can help, and this is a big deal, is if you leave us a comment on iTunes or Stitcher. That way other people can find us. It helps us keep on top of the reviews. And if you love us, take 2 minutes and leave us a review and so that other people can find us, so we can continue to bring you the best guests we can and get on people's radar. And when they go look at us, they can see that we put out a quality product for you guys. And the other two ways you can help us is you can buy some, a term I learned today, you could buy some merch at our at our Cafe Press store, merch. Or you can support us financially. And we have quite a few who are helping us keep the show afloat besides our sponsors. And that's become a patron at patreon.com. All of those links are on our webpage, as Max said, which is theuavdigest.com. So I guess with that, Max, we should say so long, farewell, Wiedersehen, good Nacht. And this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.